and welcome to Scale Your Sales Podcast, listed in 2020 as number 8 of 42 best podcasts for every sales professional. I am your host, Janice B. Gordon, the customer growth expert and author of Business Evolution, Creating Growth in a Rapidly Changing World. I created Scale Your Sales Framework to develop leading edge capabilities to secure, retain and grow key customer relationships for long-term value and partnership. Join me each week to learn from amazing B2B sales and business experts and influencers. Tune in for actionable insights and strategies. Are you ready to scale your sales?
A trailblazer in the field of customer success for 26 years in the tech industry and is founder and CEO of Desired Path. Obsessively passionate about aligning the interests of customers, vendors, and employees. Kia created the intelligent framework to help companies to be customer-centric to achieve smarter, faster revenue growth. So welcome to Scale Your Sales Podcast, Kia Poon.
Hello, Janice. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you on the podcast because I know the listeners are going to love what you have to say. But first of all, I want to pick up on one thing. Former 50 Women in Business in Switzerland, which is brilliant, but also Canadian national swim team. What? Where did that one come from? That's really interesting.
I have many different sort of chapters to my life, if you will. So the first part, act one of my life, I was an elite athlete, specifically competitive swimmer. So I was the Canadian record holder in 200-meter backstroke, a national champion, and I had world rankings in three different events, so 10th, 11th, and 17th in the world.
So do you continue to swim for exercise now?
Oh my goodness, I should do more of it. I do some open water swimming in this summertime because it definitely is a very comfortable place for me to be in the water. It's very zen-like, so I do enjoy that. But I don't get to the pool as often as perhaps I should.
You should change that to could.
Right.
Not as often as I could.
That's right. There you go. Not as often as I could.
Yeah, because you've got enough records behind you. You're okay. You're doing better than most of us.
There you go.
So let me ask you first of all, because I really loved the answers you had to this, about B2B shifting their focus, because I know your area of expertise is really about helping them to be more customer centric. So give me some more information about that, your perspective.
So I mean, I believe that companies who organize their business around this, around customers, that they just drive revenue more effectively, and they are more competitive, and they actually disrupt-proof themselves and their business. And why I say that is through my experience of 26 years in B2B software, is that what I found is, often vendors will spend their time focusing on their products and their services and ensuring that customers adopt that. But what I found in my experience is that we need to flip that around and be more customer-centric and understand why our customers buying the technology, because obviously they're not buying the technology by the technology, they're buying it to leverage it to better their business. And so we need to understand the customer from a holistic point of view of what it is that they're trying to achieve, and then understand how does our product and our services, how are they used and leveraged to in order that customers can achieve their success? And so Desired Path exists because I believe that there's this lack of understanding or an operational framework on how to operate in a customer-centric manner and in order to protect and accelerate that revenue growth across an entire a customer journey. And so that is why I created the Intelligent Framework, which is driven by industry first metrics that I created to extend the customer funnel past just marketing and sales along the entire customer funnel and life cycle, and help companies basically understand their customers and then knowing how to build their business around the patterns of their most successful customers so that they can grow customer revenue in a smarter and faster way.
So there's a few things I want to unpack there. And first is the intelligence framework. You talked about it being driven by industry first metrics and benchmarks. So how does that work?
Yeah, so that great question. So, it's analogous to the sales and marketing funnel where we've got very specific milestones that we're looking for as prospects go through the buyer's journey. I've helped companies create analogous metrics in the post-sales funnel, so the true customer funnel, to help them measure customer progress. So too often in a post-sales perspective, we are creating metrics and KPIs that we're using to measure operations and what we're doing. And in the belief that if we're doing what we're doing, it helps the customer and therefore it will in turn bring in revenue. But actually, I call those sometimes, random acts of customer success. If we are doing all sorts of activities and we don't understand that holistic perspective and why it is that customers are successful and how to repeatedly replicate that success with all customers across the board, we're not going to know how to help them in the most effective way. And so these metrics have to be very customer centric in that approach. And so I work with companies to measure their customer journey, but from that holistic customer perspective, and then help them identify what are those repeatable milestones that all of their customers should be hitting at a certain point in time. And then we use that to measure the funnel. It's almost analogous to human development, right? When you go to a doctor for an annual checkup, from birth to death, we're all unique individuals on this planet, but we all follow similar patterns, and we should be progressing at certain points of time. So if a doctor sees that a child is not progressing in the natural phases that they should be reaching, in the milestones that they should be reaching, that doesn't mean something is wrong just yet, but it means that we're monitoring them. And so in a business context, you can use that as well with customers to make sure that they're moving along in this success path in the most efficient and seamless manner.
That's an interesting analogy, because how do you take account for the markets that are a moving target? You know, their customers, but also their customers, they don't want the same thing they had in the past.
That's
they
right.
want different things. There's new technologies, there's new kind of social landscape that is changing the behaviors of the customer. So if you're using the metrics as a measure for success going forward, how do you account for, well, actually what happened in the past is not a predictor of the future? How does that accommodate?
Yeah, that's a great question. So actually that brings me to why I actually called the company Desired Path. So in architecture, there's a term called desire path or desire lines. And it is typically denoted by, human footfall traffic. So if you notice in the grass, if there's a path or a trail that's been, plotted along, those are just because it's a human-centric approach. It's, humans felt that it was a shorter, more seamless path. It was the desire path they took. And actually, architects and land planners are in some cases waiting for desire paths to form before they actually have it informs their design. Before they lay sidewalks or put something in place, they wait to see what that human-centric approach is informing them on. And so when I talk about this notion of intelligent framework and these metrics, this notion is that You are watching your customer desire path. You are watching the path of success that your customers are repeatedly taking, the patterns of your most successful customers, and you're continually observing that with this framework and these metrics. And as things evolve, as market conditions evolve, as your products and services evolve, as your customers evolve, everything is always continually evolving. You need to continue to observe that desire path and act in an organizationally agile manner to be able to support that desire path. And therefore, your metrics are observing customer progress through the journey. They're not some sort of hard-coded metrics that are, tangential to what your customer's journey is. The fact that you're measuring how customers are moving through that progress, and then you're using that feedback to re-update your operational playbooks and the content of which that you use to support your customers through that journey, that is what keeps you continually evolving as your customers do.
Okay, I've got a few things there. So one of them is around the organization. In order to be agile and continue to evolve and update as that those metrics come in for that customer or that market or the segment of customers, what do you have to do in going back through the supply chain or the organization in order to make sure that they are, we know that in companies, they get feedback and it goes in the bottom drawer, they don't actually do anything with it. And it's not because they don't want to, it's because they don't have the organization and the system to react quickly enough. So how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So again, I start with that customer-centric approach, and this intelligent framework is all encapsulating. So we start with that journey map, understanding the customer's desire path, that path of repeated success so that you can replicate that across all your customers. And then we reverse engineer to look at, okay, what are all the activities that your organization should be executing in order to support that path? Not create activities and then give an experience to the customer, and that becomes the journey. We're looking at the journey first, and then looking at the activities that it takes to support that. And then once we understand what those activities are, we then again reverse engineer into the roles and responsibilities. Now we know, okay, these are the types of activities the customers need. That's the desire path is telling us that. Now let's take a look at what are the roles and the skill sets that could deliver those types of activities? So now you have means to understand how are your people specifically aligned to supporting those customers? And then you can start to take a look at the metrics to measuring that journey and the organizational structure. And I find that we've got it backwards in business, right? We start with the organizational structure. Then we start with the role definitions. Then we define a process by which we want customers to follow or we think customers should follow in isolation from their holistic sort of their business and what they're trying to do in their environment. And then we inflict this on the customers, and then we're surprised why the experience is siloed, why it might be disconnected, why they're not adopting like we should, because we started all around ourselves in a vendor company centric specific model. And so I'm flipping that around, and then organization structure, people, etc., should be one of the last things that you either put in place if you're creating for the first time, or that you start to modify after you've understood what your customer's desire path is.
That's interesting. Now, I'm getting the feeling, the indication from you that you're mapping a group of customers or a segment of customers and looking at the success map. What are the key things that have made that customer successful? So clarify for me, do you do this on a individual customer, or do you do it on a segment group, or do you do it on a market? Because not all customers are equal. There are going to be some nuances. So how do you organize the data that you collect from your customer in order to inform the desired path?
Yeah, that's a great question. And a question I get asked quite often. So I take, you know, there's a, I'm very pragmatic, and we need to balance out a lot of things. Otherwise, things can get very complicated quickly. And so at first, what I'm starting is I start to look at the customer in aggregate. So a company with all of the various different stakeholders and personas that they have in there, regardless of the segments, et cetera, I try to figure out what is that over-encompassing desire path. Because look, we as companies are going to the market with a value proposition, and we make promises about what our services and products can do. We don't have 100 different value props about the promises that we make. So by definition, we're going to market with a very specific message of what the promise is. So at a very high level, that value proposition is true for your customers because you've already addressed that market fit. And so I look at that journey at a higher perspective, and then the playbook and the organizational structure. Because if you have a million different customer journey maps, et cetera, how do you operationalize that? How can you actually execute to support customers? It's impossible. So I like to keep things very simple and have one operational framework. And I'll use the analogy of working out. You've got an Olympic athlete, or you've got someone going to the gym and doing, you know, just going for regular fitness to keep in shape maybe twice a week. Every athlete needs to sleep, have proper nutrition, stretch, do a warm up, maybe a main set and a cool down. An Olympic athlete might have very many different coaches, might be training 6-7 hours a day, 5-6 days a week. A weekend warrior going to the gym might go twice a week, an hour a week. They might do DIY the program. They might just go and look online for some exercise routines, or they might get a personal fitness instructor and do it themselves. Both those athletes have that journey, eat, sleep, et cetera, but the way the delivery happens is very different. So once we have that consistent journey across all of the customers, then I look at how do you segment, you know, the Olympic athletes, if you will, you know, opposed to the weekend warriors or seniors looking to exercise or children, right? So you start to have your segments, and then you can start to deliver very specifically based on those needs. So then you have your taking the analogy further, you've got that coach. And then you, if it's an Olympic athlete, you're going to coach them a lot more. So if it's more of your highest strategic level customer, and they require white glove service, you might be training them as a coach might be training an Olympic athlete, dedicated time with them all the time. There's a lot more than just the sport specific training. There might be nutrition and mental health and all sorts of aspects. If it's you know, a smaller company, you can still give them an amazing experience, but you don't need to deliver in the same way. And so this is how I start to look at segmentation based on adoption needs, which is also different. I don't start to segment based on the usual way of segmenting in a sales manner. On post-sales manner, I look at what are adoption needs, and then you can start to deliver all the same plays just in a different manner, depending on who you're speaking with.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to pick up on something else you said, because it's so interesting. Well, it's all interesting. value proposition. So you said that companies will have a value proposition for their product. There is an argument to say that actually that's where sales companies are going wrong, that you actually have a value proposition for the customer, for each customer, in the way, what outcome do they want? Because we're talking about more complex sales than the transactional sales. And so for the complex sales, the way that they adopt a product, it may be the same product, you sell it, but you know, there's going to be some nuances, some changes, some bespoking of that. So the value proposition is very much to fit the customer rather than to fit the product, in which case it won't be one value proposition for the customer, for the product. It will be set, you'll create a value proposition for each of your customers.
Well, I talk about the customer's desired objective. So maybe it's just a nomenclature terminology that we're using. When I talk about value propositions, I'm talking about what is the vendor making, what promises that they're making out to the outside world about what they're offering. Of course, when you are then selling to the customer, you need to understand what it is that their objectives are and what they're trying to achieve. And the better you can understand how your services and your products meet and can be leveraged to meet their needs and objectives, the better off you are in terms of giving them an amazing experience and helping them be successful. And that, of course, is very unique to those customers. And that is where your resources should be spending the time. But if you've got everything else in your organization that's bespoke, if the way you operationalize and the way you're observing things and you have many different journeys, if everything is bespoke, you are not giving your organization the clarity, the space for them to specifically focus on the individual customer's needs. Everyone has to focus on, okay, what journey is this? All the operational things become bespoke. And it takes away the precious resource time to focus on the uniqueness of the customers. And so this is where it's really important to have commonality in the framework that you use, so that then you can spend that precious time being very unique per customer and handling it. But your operational model and your framework, your intelligent framework, should not be unique to each customer. Otherwise, it's not scalable and you will not be able to grow your business.
Yeah, really interesting. Oh my gosh, we have, you know, kind of discussed so much and delve into this. I absolutely love it. So let me ask you just a, you know, kind of like a fun fact question. If you were on a desert island, now if you had your hero, let me ask you about your hero or Shiro. Who is your hero and Shiro, or why?
You know, yeah, that's a hard question because there's so many interesting people around. How can you, you know, boil it down to one person? So I would say that anybody that exhibits high integrity, a good, strong work ethic, is, you know, quality knowledge within the area of expertise and this, and are authentic, they earn my respect very quickly. And so I'm inspired by these individuals who are driven by passion, work hard, and have a good sense of humanity.
Oh, that's lovely. I it shows a lot about your personality, which is wonderful, Kia. I've absolutely loved talking to you. So how can listeners get hold of you?
Yeah, absolutely. If anyone would like to learn more about the Intelligent Framework or bring me in to help them out to drive smarter and faster revenue growth, you can reach me at kia@thedesiredpath.com. My website has a lot of information about the Intelligent Framework and the blog. I write extensively, and that's www.thedesiredpath.com.
Excellent, excellent. I'll put all of that in the show notes as well, so they'll be easy for the audience to find it. But thank you for being a guest on Scale Your Sales podcast, Kia.
Thank you very much, Janice. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Scale Your Sales. Feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter, Janice B. Gordon, to comment and share. I'd love it if you would leave a review on ratethispodcast.com/scaleyoursales. Please subscribe for more weekly expert insights to scale your sales.